Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. 30 years ago, Mount St. Helens erupted, and a doctor, a scientist, Dr. Stephen Austin, produced a video, Mount St. Helens, Explosive Evidence for Catastrophe. And on Bob Enyart Live, we are on TV here and there throughout the years. And at that time, we were on in 80 cities, five nights a week for an hour. We aired Dr. Austin's video, Mount St. Helens, and we had a stunning reaction. That was about 15 years ago. Well, the things that we learned from Mount St. Helens, this was the science lesson of the 20th century. And to help us remember what that lesson was, in studio, welcome, Dr. Stephen Austin. It's an honor to have you here.
Good to be here and to talk about the science event of the 20th century.
It sure was. And Dr. Austin, you will be speaking in Denver this evening at the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship, 7 o'clock. People could find that online at youngearth.org. It's at Bethlehem Lutheran Church. We'll talk more about that later. So right now, it was the lesson of the 20th century for geologists. What did we learn?
We learned how fast things can form, shockingly fast. We learned about how strata form quickly. We learned about grain flow and about how particles move in slurries. We learned about the sweeping action of particles as they're being dragged along. We learned about erosion. We learned about how canyons can be formed rapidly by mud and
how canyons could be formed rapidly. That's one of the things we learned.
Yeah. We learned about strata formation, how strata can form rapidly, and we learned how canyons could be eroded rapidly.
Well, I had been taught that strata was laid down, layers of strata were laid down over centuries, millennia, millions of years, and that if you had sometimes when you go around the world we live in and you look in an inch, you might see 30 layers. It's just an inch in a canyon wall somewhere. You might see tiny little microstrata. And I remember being taught that each one of those required an annual cycle, that type of thing.
Yeah. And that was the belief generally of geologists back in the 20th century. And but rapid catastrophic process, a hurricane essentially can make laminated deposit. And that's what we've learned and seen physically happen at Mount St. Helens. 25 feet of strata, thinly layered strata, formed in 3 hours on June 12th, 1980.
June 12th, 1980. 1980, 25 feet of strata, thin layered strata.
Formed in essentially 3 hours. We have the radar imagery over Mount St. Helens arguing that the pyroclastic flows that were coming out of the volcano were making those strata within 3 hours. I went there to study them. It's just absolutely stunning to see what a hurricane can do.
And I've gone as an amateur, a tourist. I've gone to Mount St. Helens also, but I've had the benefit of your video, which we still stock in our inventory, Mount St. Helens, and going there and looking at, for one, the sheer power of the eruption, but then the consequences, the canyons, the trees that became waterlogged and sunk upright in Spirit Lake. There is so much here that seems to contradict what was taught as gospel by the old earth, atheistic, Darwinist type geologist.
Yeah, this is a wake-up call for Darwin. It's not survival of the fittest. It's survival of the luckiest, or the survival of the animals on the boat. Mount St. Helens is a laboratory for catastrophic process. Yeah, we've seen a lot of evidence of the process which buries plants and animals. And so fossilization, the process that gets animal and plants buried, is well displayed at Mount St. Helens.
So let's talk through the eruption in 1980, the force of it. It's been described as thousands of atomic bombs.
About 440 million tons of TNT, about 33,000 Hiroshima-sized atomic bombs on the 9-hour eruption on May 18, 1980.
33,000 atomic bombs blowing up in the crater of Mount St. Helens. That was the force.
Yeah, and about one atomic bomb a second over the 9-hour period of the eruption, of the main eruption on May 18, 1980.
Wow.
Atomic bomb a second. Yet that's a small to average volcano from standpoint of human history. Mm. Been a lot bigger volcanic eruptions.
Yeah, so if Darwin's survival of the fittest, if some guppy has a 1 in 10,000 better chance of survival, and there's one of these volcanoes going off as the catastrophism from all over the world, it's not really going to help his ability to survive.
And we have this wake-up call from the 20th century telling us that the slow and gradual thinking pattern in geology is junk food for the brain. Mm. We don't need to think that way. Mm. We should think about catastrophic process. That's what Mount St. Helens does. It tells me that I can think about rapid strata formation, rapid erosion of canyons, rapid formation of fossil deposits, the rapid recovery of the ecosystem after the eruption. Those are some real big lessons that come from Mount St. Helens.
Mm. So we had a debate here in Denver, and I was up against a geophysicist, John Nickel, who is the former president of one of our geological societies in this country. And they are beginning to recognize that the uniformitarianism, that everything on the surface of the earth was a result of gradual changes, that they can no longer adhere to that. They're admitting catastrophism. What role did Mount St. Helens play in that transition in their thinking? Their hand has been forced.
It was a big wake-up call. No doubt about it, Mount St. Helens was the a stimulus to understanding volcanic process. Volcanology before 1980 is very different than volcanology after 1980. So, yeah, we learned a lot. On the fifth anniversary eruption of Mount St. Helens, I was invited to speak to 1,000 geologists in Calgary about the volcano. And at the end of my talk, I sat down and the convener said, we need to introduce catastrophe theory back into geology. You could hear a pin drop. Okay, people know that we need to think this way. It's
wow.
Just just reluctance or it's junk food to go the other way.
Could I give two examples that you've already mentioned, we've mentioned? One is the formation of the canyons, a system of canyons, including Engineers Canyon. And two is the upright sinking logs in Spirit Lake, the logs that were destroyed by the blast, floating in the lake, sunk, and what they tell us about canyon formation and the petrified trees at Yellowstone and the infamous sign that had stood there for decades, which is now gone. So could we talk about those two things? First, the canyons. There are canyons where you have pictures of men standing in the bottom of the canyon. These are significant-sized canyons. They're not like the Grand Canyon. And there's a stream running through the bottom of the canyons.
Yeah, and we were out there in 1983, and I was looking at one of these canyons over 140 feet deep. This canyon was breached by a mud flow on March 19th, 1982. It was a big steam explosion pit that was filled with mud. The mud overtopped the lip of the pit. A waterfall cut back through this debris, and it made a canyon 140 feet deep. As I was sitting there, I called it Little Grand Canyon. It's 1/40th scale of Grand Canyon.
The Little Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
And so the Little Grand Canyon was formed in what time frame?
A day. The channel was opened by mud in a day.
And
catastrophic drainage of a mud flow on March 19th, 1982, breached through this barrier and made a canyon.
March 19th, 1982. Now, the strata that is now exposed in that canyon because of that breach in the mud flow, where did that strata come from?
That's all the 600 feet of deposits from 1980.
From Mount St. Helens.
The earlier eruptions in 1980.
So the strata, they were not laid down over millions of years.
No.
They were laid down in hours and days.
Yeah.
And then the formation of the canyon happened in a day. Mm-hmm. And then a resulting stream that will run through a canyon, because that's where the topography takes the water by gravity. Turns out that the stream did not form the canyon.
The canyon forms the stream.
The canyon created the stream.
That's right.
So
it's a completely backward way of thinking when you think about this. The whole land, it's Earth's newest landscape, a dozen square mile area of landslide debris has been dissected by mud and created this this monument, essentially, a miniature Grand Canyon.
So we have a laboratory proof quality evidence that canyons form streams. I don't know if the evolutionists, the old Earth geologists, have hardcore evidence that streams form massive canyons. Do they have that?
They don't. And, of course, the one we've heard in the popular rendition of things is Colorado River cut Grand Canyon over tens of millions of years.
Right.
It
went uphill. It made right and left turns that go nowhere. It did all these amazing
things. Well, yeah, the canyon was cut by the river over tens of millions of years. That's what we were taught in our textbooks when we went to school back in the 20th century.
Right.
Okay. That is generally disregarded by geologists. In fact, I can't find a geologist who wants to defend that idea.
Mm.
Okay, most geologists are gone to some kind of weird, freaky, catastrophic, or just outrageous idea, like runaway gully erosion or breaching of a dam. And, of course, it's a miniature Grand Canyon sitting at Mount St. Helens, and so we should think about the big Grand Canyon in relationship to that breaching event. So Mount St. Helens helps us understand a giant lake that was to the east of Grand Canyon that and the dam failed. I believe that's catastrophic drainage of lakes north and east of Grand Canyon.
That I've gone to the Grand Canyon 10 times. We've rafted in it with our kids once. And there's so much evidence to disprove the thought that a river carved out the Grand Canyon. It's just physically absurd. Just looking at it and being told that with a straight face is just quite an experience. But the idea that it was catastrophically formed, there's overwhelming evidence. And you're going to talk about the Grand Canyon tonight and Mount St. Helens.
Right. I'm going to do a rendition of Mount St. Helens and some of the four or five different things we've learned, the main points we learned at Mount St. Helens. Then I'm going to talk about the Grand Canyon in relationship to those things that we've learned.
All right.
Now, so I'm going to take I love to think about Grand Canyon in terms of Mount St. Helens.
Of what we learned there. So that what we were told, here's evidence that the Earth is millions of years old because little streams and rivers create canyons and the strata takes millions of years to be laid down and then it's carved out grain by grain. Here we have a laboratory experiment with Mount St. Helens. I call it a laboratory. And it's the opposite. The exact opposite happened.
Right.
Okay, so then we've got trees. When the volcano blew, it knocked down tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of trees.
A million trees were floating in Spirit Lake the day after May 18th, 1980. A million logs. And we...
Now, Spirit Lake was at the base of the summit of
Mount St. Helens.
And the lake itself was dramatically altered.
Giant landslide went into the lake, about 200 feet of deposits over the 5-square-mile area lake or something like that. And an enormous water wave, 860 feet high, cut the trees off the slopes. The wave came back into the lake. The lake was 200 feet higher than it was before the eruption, with a million logs floating there.
Oh,
people
my.
Saw it the day after. Actually, I talked to the helicopter pilot who saw it first on May 18, about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. He said, Spirit Lake is gone. It's gone, totally gone. And then... Of course, everything was gray, covered with ash.
Right.
And then days later, the logs started to part. You could see there was water underneath
the logs. So
Spirit Lake
wasn't gone, but it was dramatically altered.
Dramatically altered.
An 800-foot wave that went up on the hillside around the lake and brought back into the lake the trees that had been growing.
Yeah.
Of all sizes, mature trees, a forest.
Yeah.
And then something happened to those trees that I recall from watching this video back in the 90s that you got video from on the surface of the lake and from under the water. And that eventually forced the hand of the National Park Service, and they took down a sign that had been standing for decades in Yellowstone with their petrified trees. So let's start with what happened to the trees floating in Spirit Lake.
Well, that was a great question that we wanted to know. Okay, and I was a student at University of Washington. I had defended my PhD dissertation at Penn State University on a floating log mat idea for how coal could form and how logs could be buried in the earth. And I did it on basis of bathtub modeling. Well, when Mount St. Helens exploded 10 months after I defended my PhD dissertation, then I needed to go there to see it.
This was bigger than a bathtub.
A lot bigger than my bathtub. Yeah. And I had a floating log mat for study. So that's the real reason I went to Mount St. Helens. But the floating logs started falling out onto the bottom of the lake in standing position. And since sedimentation was occurring rapidly, the logs were falling out vertically with their roots embedded in sediment.
Well, let me see. Now, we're on radio. On the video, you show this.
Yes.
We're on radio, so let's help people understand. You've got logs by the thousands in different sections of Spirit Lake, and they're getting waterlogged, and they begin to sink.
But they don't stay floating prone on the surface of the lake. One end sinks first.
They don't sink horizontally because the root part of the trunk of the tree, the base of the trunk.
Wood. Denser wood.
The wood is more dense.
And it gets water in it more effectively than the other end of a log. So they float upright.
And they also have rocks bound up in the roots because trees grow over rocks and soil. And so the trunk is heavier, denser, and the tree begins to turn upright. It's sort of an eerie looking thing. Trees that have been catastrophically busted from where they were growing, and their roots are broken off 2-3 feet from the base of the tree or less, and now they're floating in this lake. They're upright floaters.
And the upright floaters, we were watching them. We saw them do that. So what was happening on the bottom of the lake? We had to go dive to the bottom. We did a sonar survey of the lake, and we saw tens of thousands of upright objects standing on the bottom. Then we did scuba dive, and we scuba dove on the logs.
Who did that for you, going under the water?
I did.
You did that for you?
Yeah. I was unmarried at the time, and I had signed my life away with the National Park Service. And I was in an eruption, seeing the eruption going on right in back of me as I was breathing compressed air. It was an eerie experience and risky.
Yeah.
But I got the answer to a couple of questions. Those logs do fall out at different times and get their root ends buried at different levels. They stand vertical on the bottom of the lake. They look like the petrified forest at Yellowstone National Park.
That's what it looks like. These trees, their branches for the most part are broken off by the blast and the wave that destroyed them in situ where they were. So now they're sinking at different rates at different times in the lake, but the lake is receiving debris still from the environment, and the sediments are settling at the bottom of the lake so that there's strata, effectively layers of sediments being formed at the bottom of the lake, and these trees are implanting in the different layers of strata, new form strata at the bottom of the lake.
That's right. It's a physical process that's going on. And then immediately the sign at Specimen Ridge in Yellowstone comes to our attention.
Right.
There's 27 distinct layers of fossil forest that the sign says flourished over millions of years.
So over millions of years, supposedly, forest evolved at one level, one strata, and it got wiped out who knows why, and it left a few hundred trees. And then it all happened again and again and again, 27 times on the same basic part of the globe, leaving fossilized trees. And here's where I was really angry, Dr. Austin, at the National Park Service for not telling the public that these trees had no root systems. Those roots were abruptly broken off, and they knew this. The trees 1, 2, 3 feet from the base of the trunk, the roots were broken off. That's proof that those trees did not grow there on location. They should have admitted that long before your video, but your video forced their hand.
Well, the sign became very controversial. I'm not the only one to make the sign controversial. In fact, no. I don't think I need to take very much credit for it.
Well, your video was the straw that broke the camel's back. They could no longer sustain the obvious falsehood that these trees grew there.
Yeah. So anyway, whatever happened, the sign is gone.
Well, tens of thousands of these videos going out all over the country and around the world. That was like a swell of public opinion that the National Park Service is lying to the public. So, and could I tell, I think I've told this story on the air, a bit of an inside. When we aired this, the National Park Ranger in Hawaii was stunned by your video. My wife and I ended up flying out to Maui. He was at Haleakala Volcano there on Maui. And he began an effort to use peer pressure with his peer at Yellowstone to say, this sign has got to come down. This is propaganda. And eventually we know it did come down in the mid-90s.
Yeah, and it was Erlendorf in the 1980s that spun the story about the petrified forest at Yellowstone. It was in Scientific American magazine. It was part of popular culture.
Mm.
To believe that there are millions of years in this series of fossil forests at Yellowstone.
Right. So what we know now is that whole hillside region of Yellowstone experienced the cataclysmic event, and there were trees floating, thousands, millions of trees, and any number of them sunk and became embedded, and they're the petrified trees in the 27 strata.
Well, it looks that way.
Yeah. And they might not admit it that clearly, but that's clear. That is what happened.
And Mount St. Helens is a miniature Yellowstone. Yellowstone is a colossal volcano, thousands of times the size of Mount St. Helens. Mm. So on the big scale, these other volcanoes can do what Mount St. Helens did.
Mm.
And lots of mud flow evidence and evidence of rapid deposition around those logs at Yellowstone. A correlating tree ring sequence from logs at different layers was done, proving that logs
in
with
different
a root
layers
ends,
of strata,
different layers of strata,
were growing at the same time.
We're growing at the same time,
right?
In other words, a correlating tree ring sequence that would argue that trees grew at the same time were found in logs with the root ends buried at different layer
right.
levels.
And now,
that, for me, is a clincher
that's
argument.
That's the clincher. And, you know, they'll go with that with the bristlecone pine in the White Mountains of California, and they'll say, look at how old these trees are. But you show it at Yellowstone, and you say, look, this icon you have, that these trees grew in forests millions of years apart, it's disproved because of the correlation of the tree rings. And, boy, they have a hard time accepting their own kind of evidence when it shows catastrophe.
Yes. So it's the learning experience of the 20th century. Mm. It's a science learning experiment of the 20th century.
Okay, so tonight at 7 o'clock, Friday night, May 14th, 2010, Dr. Steve Austin will be at the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship, and that is at Bethlehem Lutheran Church on Wadsworth at 20th Avenue. So 20th and Wadsworth, it's in their chapel. Lord willing, I'll be there. I've told my kids, Dr. Austin, we have 7 boys, Cheryl and I, and our 3 youngest ones, we're planning to be there, so the 4 of us. So we're looking forward to this. And you're also, we only have a couple minutes left, but you're going to talk about these lessons and the Grand Canyon.
Now, Grand Canyon has become an icon for evolution, hasn't it?
Mm.
Slow and gradual process. Calm and placid seas, a billion years, deep time, that kind of thing. And Grand Canyon needs to be reinterpreted in this catastrophic way of thinking. At least everybody needs to think about the alternative.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I'm on to. I discovered some things at Mount St. Helens that have amazing application to Grand Canyon.
Could I ask you about an argument I've made standing on the south rim of the canyon? I give informal tours to tourists, and they get the line that the strata were laid down over millions of years. And you could look at you know, obvious evidence of thousands of square miles of strata, and the uniform boundary between the strata is just amazing to look at. And the erosion, wind and water erosion and animal and plant behavior is ruthless to a terrain over centuries, let alone millions of years. And if these strata, thick strata, microstrata, if they were laid down over millions of years, you should see mostly irregularities between all the boundaries. And your eye tells you, you could take in an enormous amount of data at one time. There's amazingly uniform boundaries, horizontal boundaries between these strata layers.
Yeah, 4,000 feet of flat-lying strata in Grand Canyon. Very little evidence of erosion between the strata. No evidence of tectonic tilting. Yeah, that is amazing. And then the other thing...
So isn't that pretty solid proof that those strata were not laid down over millions of years?
Well,
Somebody
needs to come to us with the argument, why do we need to think of millions of years? In other words, it's always assumed millions of years unless somebody goes in there and asks the other way. So the ocean was over the continent, okay, when the 4,000 feet of strata were deposited. I think that's obvious. Mm. What kind of ocean was it? Was it millions of years? Or a catastrophic global flood?
According to our government, as we map the floor of the ocean, which we do for the Navy and all, the floor of the oceans change dramatically constantly. To think that you're going to get beautifully horizontal strata with perfectly undisturbed boundaries over the 10,000 square miles, it's just bizarre. It's simply bizarre. So we're out of time. But we could learn a lot more and continue this tonight, right, Dr. Stephen Austin?
Love to talk to you more about it tonight.
All right. The senior research scientist at ICR, the Institute for Creation Research, if you don't have the video, Mount St. Helens, you'll want to watch it, and you could get it from us here at Bob and Yurt Live, online at kgov.com. Just click on the store, go to our science department. You'll find it filled with fascinating resources, including this DVD, Mount St. Helens, Explosive Evidence for Catastrophe. And again, our website is at kgov.com. You could also call us at 800-8-NYARDS, 1-800-836-9278. Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada, what a fabulous school. And tonight at 7 o'clock in the Denver area, come on out, you'll love it. Wadsworth and 20th at Bethlehem Lutheran Church. Dr. Steve Austin, may God bless you.